Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Left side three. Remy.
Got it!
Levine, turn around, jumper up. Get it! Onions! Baby onions! Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome in to Locked On Bulls, making her debut on the podcast. Somebody who, if you've been following Chicago sports for a long time, you know very well from her days with what used to be Comcast Sportsnet and now NBC Sports Chicago, covering all your teams with talent and grace and insight and entertainment. She now does color commentary for the Brooklyn Nets for the YES Network, in addition to doing work for Fox Sports. She's also, by the way, a DePaul Hoops legend. She is the one, the only, Sarah Kustak, who you can follow on Twitter at Sarah Kustak. Sarah, welcome to the pod. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Even better with that introduction. I think you might have embellished a little bit, but Matt, Jordan, I really am. I'm thrilled to be on with you guys. And no matter where I'm at, my heart always, there's a piece of it that is keeping tabs on the Chicago Bulls and in all things Chicago and Chicago sports. So I'm excited to be on with you guys.
It was so great to meet you over All-Star Weekend, because I feel even as you left Chicago and went on to bigger and better things, you always have that in presence, and some of it's on Twitter and some of it's just, I think, honestly, there's just something about you and your delivery that just says Chicago to me. And I think I'm not alone when I say that. So it's always nice to see you out there. And I love your takes on hoops. So let's start with that. The Brooklyn Nets, despite, you know, the kind of false start with the Kyrie KD experience, did end up going to the Orlando bubble for the play-in games with, you know, a third of their would-be roster. So obviously nobody really expected them to do anything spectacular in that regard. But what was it like for you? Because I saw from following you along on Twitter that you guys were calling games that were happening in the bubble from, like, you guys were like on the court at Barclays Center. Is that correct? What was that like?
That is correct. It was such a unique and bizarre experience. And I think so many other individuals can speak to this. I think you can apply it to broadcasting and probably across all professions. But we were calling games. It was Ian Eagle and myself, and Ryan Rucco did some games. Michael Grady, of course, part of our broadcast team, calling games remotely from Barclays Center. So we had a setup of which we did some on cameras and our open hits actually on, you'd say, on the floor of Barclays Center. The court, of course, was not down, but just the, you know, the empty arena, being in a place that's normally, you know, loud and raucous, and you're thinking about getting ready for a game. The fact that we were truly the only ones in there was just wild. And then one of the interviews rooms, the press conference rooms, we had a setup by which I and myself, or Ryan and myself, would be in there. Headsets, normal setup that we would have courtside, but it was just a bunch of monitors and calling games off the screens. We were socially distanced from each other, and I think that was the setup for a lot of the local or regional broadcasts that were calling games. And then there was a point of which Ian Eagle went down to the bubble and was in the bubble because he was calling games for TNT. And so I was in Brooklyn, in Barclays Center. He was down in the bubble. We had like each other pulled up on our iPads of FaceTime. We were looking at monitors. Everyone was in a different place. And I was like, wow, if this isn't 2020 added onto the list. But needless to say, as I know we all are experiencing and just felt, you know, the idea of basketball being back and getting to see these players play and the teams play, we were so grateful for that.
It is crazy to me to think about, not just even in the NBA, working at the Score, listening to Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer when games were away from Wrigley. They were still going to Wrigley every single day, calling games in front of an empty stadium. And so you saw that kind of across all sports. And I found it fascinating the way that broadcasters were able to adapt to that. What was something that was particularly difficult about doing games on monitors? Is there something that, I guess the regular broadcast experience wouldn't be able to deliver, but also was there something that you picked up on that maybe is a skill you can use once things hopefully go back to somewhat normal? Is there something that you could use in a broadcast that you're like, hey, I don't know if I would have gotten that had I not been able to have this chance to do remote games?
Jordan, that's an excellent question because I hadn't necessarily thought about it that way. I think the natural instinct and in the reaction for all of us is so many of us colleagues across the country and around the league, we're talking to each other and just kind of picking up tips and what was this like, what was that like? I think the first natural, okay, you need to make sure to focus on your energy. There is so much, regardless of where you're at and regardless of how full it is, there is such an environment, as you guys know, within the course of a game and the arena and the fans and everything that goes along with it, that the idea of every moment of the entire game, despite the fact you're sitting either in an empty arena or an empty room and it's just, you know, just a couple of you and you're looking at TV on the screen, you need to bring that same type of energy to the broadcast. But I think the biggest challenge in calling games, and I think you could speak to the play-by-play announcer or the analyst, you just miss so much because of what you're watching on the screen. You're not seeing different angles, just the concept of seeing the whole floor and how plays are developing. And if there are certain aspects to what you're watching that being courtside or being in the arena, you just don't necessarily have a feel for. If you're looking down at the bench or you're watching the coaches or what develops after a play, in terms of some of the interactions that take place that you are privy to or conversations that you get a chance to somewhat overhear. I think those things that you're able to bring to the viewer or bring to the listener, that provides so much added insight and is part of, you know, us being there, of seeing things and telling some of the stories that the viewers can't necessarily see. You know, we were just like a viewer, you know, we were just like everyone sitting on your couch watching the game. And of course, you know, in many ways are trying to do the same type of breakdowns and bring what you bring to the table. But I think that's the part. In terms of what you would pull from it and take from it, you know, I think it's just that focus and appreciation of, you know, more than anything, what I'll take from it is, my goodness, I don't know when the time will come that we will hopefully be back in arenas and be calling games at any degree of how we were able to before. And I don't know what that will look like, but you better believe there will be, even if there was not a ton of appreciation before, there'll be even more as that comes.
Sarah, there have been a couple of interesting ties between the Bulls and the Nets in their respective off seasons when it comes to organizational changes, particularly in coaching chairs. Obviously, there was a lot of talk from a bunch of different organizations that had coaching vacancies, were expected to have coaching vacancies when Brooklyn decided to part ways with Kenny Atkinson. The Bulls were certainly one of the teams where his name was floated this offseason before Arturis Karnišovas, our new head of basketball ops, pounced on the suddenly available Billy Donovan. I was curious to get your perspective on what exactly happened with that dissolved marriage between the Nets and Kenny Atkinson, and what might, you know, lie ahead for him. Do you see him, you know, we just saw Stan Van take the Pelicans job to, you know, from your perspective, what happened with Kenny Atkinson there in Brooklyn?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of layers to it, and you know, complicated circumstances that probably had a lot of moving parts and moving pieces, of which feel like a lifetime ago, considering, you know, everything that we've gone through over the course of the last 6-7 months. However, I think it was a circumstance where, whether it was different views, different visions, different personalities, different ideas of what was happening both on the court, off the court, I just think things were not meshing. And that goes top to bottom. I would put it ownership. I would put it front office. I would put it team personnel. And I say all that to say that I have the utmost respect for Kenny Atkinson as a head coach, as a person. I know so much of what he is known for is his ability to develop players, which I think it speaks for itself with a lot of the individuals on Brooklyn that made such big strides under him and the coaching staff involved. But I believe if given the opportunity, I would have a ton of faith that Kenny Atkinson also would be a team, not just about young guys in development, but to be able to coach a team that has higher expectations. However, I think those circumstances of the Brooklyn Nets, how that unfolded, and where they landed, I think Kenny Atkinson, to your point, I was asked a lot from those in Chicago and even around the league. And I believe that he will be a head coach somewhere again. And I was pulling for him just knowing him about the Bulls job. But man, I can't say enough about what a home run hire I think Billy Donovan is. And of course, watching him in Oklahoma City and we had all crossed paths, but he's a New York guy and from New York and played at Providence. So a lot of my colleagues and friends around here, familiar with him, friends with him. So I think even just a deeper understanding and ability to kind of get a feel for who he is. And I, with the way the Bulls roster looks, what I believe, and I may be a little biased being from Chicago, but I still think, even going into last season, looking at the potential of some of these young players and the core group, and knowing how Billy Donovan has such a great ability to balance the dynamic of holding players accountable and helping them develop, but also, being a coach that can resonate with them and find ways and understand ways to get them to be at their best. I think he's a great basketball mind, just, given the fact I love just watching what he's done with Oklahoma City. I think we really got to see it this past season, and particularly in the bubble, just the ability to adapt with different personnel and not just be set on, this is a system, this is a style, but maybe understanding how to utilize your players to the best of their ability. So I can't say enough good things about him, the front office. You had mentioned Arturas Karnišovas. He was one of the finalists for the Brooklyn Nets general manager job that eventually went to Sean Marks. But just doing a deep dive through those, times and through that year, a few years back, and watching his progression of when he eventually was assistant GM with Denver. You guys know the whole run of, moving to GM with Tim Connelly and moving to that president of basketball operations role, but knowing what they did and their ability to draft, the scouting, his experience internationally, and just how he brings so many different things to the table. The Chicago Bulls organization, I believe, is in really, really good hands.
We'll get back to our conversation with Sarah Kustak in just a second. I want to tell you guys about our friends at Built Go. They come from Built Bar. I've been telling you guys about Built Bar for the last several months. Built Go is a brand new product, whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. They're easy to take 1.5 ounce packages. Put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever. Your golf bag to power you through the back nine. Built Go combines energy gel with a collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into your system fast. Plus, it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite your work. Beta alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. Built Go then kicks to keep me going strong, like vitamins B6 and B12. Got 10,000% of your daily suggested portion of B12 vitamins. Collagen promotes joint and soft tissue, hair and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. So go to BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON. They've got three delicious flavors for you: peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. You'll get 20% off of your next order, but you got to use the promo code LOCKED and you got to go to BuiltGo.com. Once again, use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Now back to Sarah Kustak.
Well, we certainly won't object to any of that optimism because, as you know, people who have been doing a Daily Bulls podcast for the past 3 years of a rebuild that hasn't built anything, it's nice for the fan base to finally have something to look forward to, because I think fans feel that way for the first time in a long time. So absolutely, that kind of optimism is welcome here. Maybe it wasn't eight to 12 months ago, but it certainly is now. There is another coaching tie between Brooklyn and Chicago, that being Chris Fleming. You brought up Billy Donovan and how excited you are to see what he can do with this young Bulls roster. The latest headlines for the Bulls here in Chicago was that Billy Donovan is essentially starting over with his coaching staff, dismissing four people from Jim Boylan's staff that were holdovers, save one, and that one being Chris Fleming, who the Bulls brought over from Brooklyn just last year. Fleming, a guy who got a lot of credit helping Kenny Atkinson develop that young Brooklyn team that really wasn't expected to do as much as they did. Any thoughts or perspective you could offer on what Chris Fleming did while he was in Brooklyn and maybe what he can help Billy Donovan do here in Chicago?
Yeah, I'm shedding a lot of praise. I'm really coming in with sunshine for you guys. And again, it's not just a matter of hopefulness. I mean, I think with all things, how coaching staffs mesh, but just these are both guys that have been around the league for a really long time and have a ton of experience in different areas. And I think Chris Fleming, correct me if I'm wrong, he was the head coach of that Great Britain team, and he's been in different positions, different areas, and that includes, you know, sharpening things on the offensive side and how you want to run things, but also even player development. And he was someone who I saw firsthand just his work with guys and his ability to recognize and identify what guys could do and use to get their game to another level. And so when you start to look down the Bulls roster and think about different areas really of expertise and, you know, both ends of the floor and what Billy Donovan, you know, understands what to do defensively. But I just think he'll be a great add from that concept of, for the Bulls, it's not just going to be, of course, about development. And that's a term these days, I feel like, in the NBA, between talking about player development and culture, those words are probably used at not, you know, over and over again. But I feel like Chris Fleming is a guy who understands how to work with a team like this, because you talk about similarity in coaching staff. And I also think, you know, in some ways there, it's very comparable to potentially where the Brooklyn Nets were at just a few years ago under Kenny Atkinson, and when they, you know, were starting to build some of these players. So I like the move. And again, I would circle back to, I trust the fact that Billy Donovan has a great grasp, given his experience both in NBA and just as a coach, a great grasp of what he needs to fill some of those gaps for a group.
I can promise you that there is no abundance of optimism that can be shared here on this podcast, because Matt and I have done 3 years.
I've got it. I really do. I really do have it. And I say this, and Jordan, I didn't mean to cut you off and let you get to your next question, but I even felt this way. I mean, I think about, you know, before last season started and looking at some of these players, and I may have been, you know, a little over my skis saying that, but I felt like the Bulls were going to be one of those teams contending for the eighth spot in the playoffs last year, given some of the young talent and guys and how that develops. And of course, things didn't go that way. And the injuries play into it. And obviously there's been a lot of changes otherwise in coaching staff related, but I do, I think this is a roster and a group that you should be really optimistic about.
It is. It's kind of weird that, like, overnight, and Matt and I had talked about this, and it's such a weird year that we weren't expecting a whole lot after the shutdown from the Bulls. The sudden change in the front office, and just, I guess, the sudden philosophy with the Bulls and their front office and their organization as a whole, just to say, you know what, enough's enough. I feel like we don't want to become the team that people forget about in Chicago. And I keep repeating that to a lot of people, and people kind of take a step back and think about that for a second. It's like, you've got five pro teams here, and each fan base in this city for their respective teams has a bunch of hardcore fans, and when they're winning, it is the most fun team to talk about. And I felt for a long time that the Bulls don't want to become the team that people are like, you know what, a 7 p.m. game, Bulls Nets, do I really want to flip that on a Thursday night? Maybe I'll watch a movie instead. Like, you want to be the team that you're planning and prioritizing your day around watching the Bulls. And I think to some extent, maybe we're at rock bottom and maybe we're looking up at this point, but I think there's a ton of optimism with this Bulls team. You brought up a good point though with the Nets, and thinking back a couple of years to where they are now with KD and Kyrie, I'm curious about guys like Jared Allen and Caris LeVert and Joe Harris, these guys that sort of went under the radar, and as they started to develop and play a couple of more years, get some chemistry together, they started to really start to peak and people started to see the value of those guys. Caris LeVert, somebody that I'm very interested in, though, not just from a perspective of somebody who went to IU and watched him beat up Indiana for 4 years while he was in college, but just some of the things that he's overcome, like his ACL injury and then coming back and dropping 51 right before the shutdown, then coming to the bubble and playing outstanding. What can you say about the work ethic of Caris LeVert? And if people have been entertaining us with crazy trade hypotheticals, but just a idea of the type of player Caris LeVert is and the type of players that I guess the Nets have been able to draft and develop and turn into these really qualified role players or budding stars.
Yeah, and I think the names you bring up, if you want to keep talking about positivity, a lot of that too comes when you mentioned Caris LeVert and Joe Harris and Jared Allen in particular. They are such quality character individuals that their work ethic second to none, like so much of development. We talk about coaches. I think it's a huge reason coaching staff, but also it comes internally from players who are driven to be the best and try and get to the ceiling of what they could be. And for someone like Caris LeVert, I'll start with his potential. I don't even think he's come close to reaching his potential. And he's dealt with some injuries, you know, some foot injuries, foot surgery. He dropped in the draft coming out of Michigan, I think, because he injured his foot and had surgery his senior year. So he didn't end up actually playing for the Nets until, I want to say it was around January or February, his rookie season. Horrific injury 2 seasons ago with a dislocated ankle, but just he has been on and off with some injuries. However, I think some of them are less related to necessarily someone that you get concerned with injuries, and more just a few fluke things had happened to him. But he was a monster in the bubble. But as you mentioned, even leading coming out of the All-Star break, I mean, anyone that can go to TD Garden against that Boston Celtics team, that very good defense that can put up 51, and took over the game. And that is also what he's shown when he's caught a rhythm and when he's been healthy and when he's able to play. I mean, for Caris LeVert, his quickness, he's got a herky-jerky way of going about him, but I think how he's continued to develop is just the game has slowed down for him. So he used to be someone that was going 110 miles per hour all the time because he just works his butt off, but he realized the stop-and-go game and the use of the pace, and he can get to the basket with such ease. So it's about, you know, just figuring out his body is when he is on, his three-point game is on. So I think when we've seen him last season's postseason in the playoffs and then this postseason, he really is just someone that I think the upside is so high, and what he does on the defensive end of the floor, getting in the passing lane, steals, his ability to guard multiple positions, truly being the essence of a two-way player. I can't say enough good things about where I think he will go, because if you look at his numbers, and again, I'll go back to me, it matters. Like, it matters what type of numbers, you know, 2 years ago against Philadelphia that you were putting up in the playoffs. It matters what you did. And I know the circumstances were unique in the bubble, but how he took over that team and put them on their shoulders and able to play against a Toronto team in the playoffs and put up the type of performances that he did. And even, you know, earlier throughout the seeding games, tremendous game against a Portland team that he had a shot at the buzzer to win it and ends up missing it. But Portland needed that game to get in. So he's been in big moments already early on. And I really do think that, you know, his drive to improve is something that, you know, will take him to really, really great places. And same goes for Jared Allen. I mean, the fact that, you know, he's a guy who I think I'm not sure if he's 21 years old, maybe 21 years old.
It's crazy. It feels like he's been in the league for 5, 6, 7 years at this point.
Right. It feels that way, you know, and he just finished his third year, but his growth has been exponential. And his, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder, and he's someone who feels like he's got a lot to prove. Joe Harris is just knockdown shooter, but now has added so much to his game. His ability to drive a closeout, to make plays, his assist numbers have gone up. So I know I'm talking so highly about these players, but I do think it'll be interesting, given the offseason, you know, with the draft coming up and what teams decide to do in the draft, and just the way that lays out and look. And I told Matt this, I haven't deep dove into a lot of these players, but when you look at the teams, and particularly the Bulls being at that number four spot, do they keep it? Do they try and move up? Do you move down? How you utilize that, how you utilize free agency and trades? I just feel like this offseason, whatever it looks like, is going to be really fascinating for a lot of us because the potential for the movement of a lot of these teams.
Talking with the incomparable Sarah Kustak here on the Locked On Bulls podcast. Follow her on Twitter at Sarah Kustak. Sarah, talking about all of these Brooklyn Nets players who have, you know, in some ways pleasantly surprised with their evolution. And of course, Bulls fans love to do the one that got away, you know, mentality, whether it be with D Rose or Jimmy Butler watching the Heat make a surprising run to the finals. But then there are also the one that got away conversations about little fringe pieces of the Bulls. And nobody gets more love in that regard in Chicago than Spencer Dinwiddie recently, who looked like an amazing potential piece for a summer league where he looked like the best player on the court for large stretches. The Bulls decided they didn't need him. They needed a roster spot for somebody else. He moves on, and all of a sudden, here he is in Brooklyn. He averaged like over 20 points a game, nearly 7 assists a game for Brooklyn this season, making them better than people thought in their false start, as I mentioned, without the duo of Kyrie and KD. And so I'm curious to get your thoughts on the evolution of his game. And then also, the most intriguing thing about Spencer Dinwiddie right now to me is this thing he's trying to do with his contract, where,
oh goodness,
he's trying to like turn his contract into something that public investors can buy into and maybe influence where he decides to go on his next contract and all this stuff. The league's, you know, the league did shut it down and say this is 100% against the CBA. It's in violation of the CBA. But what are your thoughts on the way that Dinwiddie has brought his NBA game to a new level? And also, do you see some possible future where what Dinwiddie's kind of tinkering around with his contract right now actually happens to some level at the in the NBA?
I wish I'll start with that because I have such a low level of understanding of it. I believe he wanted to turn his contract into a digital token.
Right.
I know he's been big on Bitcoin. I don't know the specifics of it. I do think, though, in some capacity, and I don't want to say he's got around some of these stipulations of the league, but I do believe there is something that has taken place with it, some forward movement and progress. And he is very serious about, I mean, he does he created an app called a Galaxy app, which again, I don't have a great understanding, but so much of it for him and his ideas on this is engagement and for fan engagement. And just I don't know if you follow him on Twitter or social media, but you will just quickly find out that he is someone that appreciates engaging and engaging with fans. And I think that's a part of the reasoning behind his idea for the push of this, that he feels like it would really elevate the level of fans feeling a part and invested in not only the league, but individual players. And I do think that when it comes to Spencer, he's a different cat. Like, he's unique. He is incredibly bright. He's got the basketball savvy intelligence on the floor, but that applies to off the floor as well. And I think you see that as a part of it. And he's really been, I mean, he's as proud as ever to continue talking about how he played for the Windy City Bulls. And he is someone, as we know, many players are like, that utilize some of these cuts or being waived, that they have a chip on their shoulder because of it. And I will say Spencer's probably one of those individuals, especially with his love for the city of Chicago. But I think he's someone who we just every year, his ability to be available for so many of these players that we talk about injuries, or is, as you guys know, especially with the Bulls team last season, how injuries can affect. He has just been, he takes care of his body. I mean, the fact that he's 26, 27, But he has always been so dedicated to being very stringent on his diet, on his workouts, all sorts of things in that regard. The sports performance team, you know, adores what he's been able to do with that. And, you know, I know some things are out of your control, but he's always been available. So with some Kyrie Irving injuries, you go back to D'Angelo Russell, had gotten injured, Jeremy Lin. I mean, you're going back in the days of the Brooklyn Nets, but so many of his opportunities came because other guys ahead of him were injured and he took advantage of the opportunity and ran with it. And he has developed so much, not just physically and the quickness he brings to the game, 6'6" length, he can get to the rim, but he's also a pass first guy. And I think for him, just knowing how to organize an offense, how that's helped teams pushing the pace, the tempo, how he can defend for a variety of reasons, his game continues to grow each and every year. And I think so much of that has been valued and appreciated because of the moments and because of the way in which he really is just willing to do and fit into whatever the role the team needs and what they need to him to do in certain moments and certain times. And he's flourished to this point, and I still think there's a whole lot more room for him to grow.
I see so many parallels between the Nets and the Bulls, like the Nets of a few years ago and the Bulls at which point they're at right now. And you're making me very excited if it becomes an optimistic look over the next couple of years for this Bulls team, because those are the exact things I think fans of the Bulls for a long time have been kind of wanting. Is like, we didn't really have an identity after Butler left. We knew we were going into a rebuild. A lot of the injuries hampered a lot of us being able to actually evaluate these guys and see what they look like and what they're going to be on this Bulls team. But having some type of sense that things are going to work out, I think, has a lot of Bulls fans very, very optimistic of what the future looks like in the next couple of years. I wanted to ask you, when I say Zach LaVine to you, what's the first couple of things that come to your mind? And overall, what is the talk from somebody who doesn't cover this market anymore, who maybe it just checks in on the Bulls once in a while, but like, what's the talk about Zach LaVine? Because he is so polarizing in this city, like a lot of borderline stars can be in Chicago. What are people saying around the league about Zach LaVine and what his future might look like?
I'll first say I am a huge fan of Zach LaVine. And I think this goes back to, and we see this across the league, and even you asking about Spencer Dinwiddie, for example, or we see this with different players, Jimmy Butler and Miami. Sometimes so much of this league is about fit, and that fit includes the organization. It includes coaching staffs and the understanding of how to utilize players and put them in the best position possible, and also the roster they're surrounded by. And I'm not going to act like I watch Zach LaVine every single game throughout the course of the past couple seasons, but watching the last 2 years in particular and coming back from that injury. And it's not just, I think for some guys, you can look at points and it's like, okay, are these empty numbers? How are they getting them the way they're getting them? He can score. And his bounce are things we know. His athleticism are things we know. But I think he's developed even, and you start to see, especially last year, such a great feel for the game. And that's something I think that will continue to improve. And I think, you know, the big factor always is three-point shooting, particularly with, you know, with wings or with guards. I mean, I was saying the same thing about Caris LeVert that you say about Zach LaVine. Like, man, if that becomes consistent, if his ability to pull up becomes consistent, in times I watch him, I'm like, man, he's knocking down some tough shots. I mean, and if you get to the point where the last two seasons, well, he's shooting somewhere around 38% from three. You know, if you can be a threat, then with your ability to get to the basket, I'm really high on what he can do under Billy Donovan and how Billy Donovan can help not only the roster around him and some of these other players develop better, but how are you able to put someone like him in the right positions and in places where he can thrive and take on the responsibility you want him to have, but also be a player, you know, that has moments that he's also get an opportunity to let other guys share some of that load. And so I'm interesting to see. And I think we also forget, I mean, how old is he? What, 24?
He's 25. 23? He's going to be 26 at the, let's see, February is his birthday.
He'll be 26 in March.
Oh, in March. Okay.
And that's like, I think guys sometimes come in the league so young and we automatically were like, this is what they're going to be, or this is where they're at. And I think with, again, I put a lot of stock into this coaching staff or what, but I think this is still where some players start to hit their prime, and just their better understanding, whether it's film study, whether it's other teams around the league. You know, I think there's still so much growth and development that could happen with someone that just has that amount of raw ability.
It's a good point. And I think he's criminally underrated as far as people who talk about Zach LaVine but may not watch him day in and day out. I think he he's criminally underrated. I think he gets a bad rap for his defense too, which kind of hinders things. And we were having many conversations with people who watch the Bulls day in and day out, and they said, you know, the one thing that is missing from Zach LaVine's game is something that he can affect, but it can't just be him, and that's winning ball games consistently. And we talk to people all the time and they say, you win games, you start to get noticed. It doesn't matter how many points you're putting up. Zach can put up 30 a game, but if he's not winning games, if you're still losing by a dozen or more, people aren't going to really care. They're going to think it's empty stats. But I'm 100% with you, and I think the work ethic thing is also criminally underrated, because guys like Caris LeVert, I have so much respect for guys who come into the league, especially early on, have major adversity to go through with, whether it be a major injury like Zach had, and then just the willingness to put in the work to come back and get better and stronger year after year after year. And there's a lot of skepticism in Chicago when he came here for the first year. He only played in about 25 games or so, but that summer when the Bulls had to make a decision on whether or not to sign him to a long-term deal and extend him or let him walk to Sacramento, a lot of people were 50-50 even at that point. They're like, I don't know if this guy's going to be able to put in the work to do it. And he's proved a lot of Bulls fans wrong. Do you feel like that is something, like I see a very similar parallel in terms of work ethic between him and Caris LeVert. Is that something that you see as unique for guys like LaVine and LeVert in their situations with injuries? Or do you think maybe that's just something that you're either built with or you're not?
I think that there is to some extent, like your DNA and how you're built and how, you know, the cloth you're cut from. There are certain levels of I don't believe that you're a professional basketball player playing in the NBA if you're not working hard. I mean, I think that across the board for as many people that, you know, sit there and want to talk about guys not working hard, there's degrees to it. And for Zach LaVine, and you see it in Caris, and you can go down the list, so many players. When you get injured and when you are rehabbing and when you're working to get back, the amount of not only physical, but mental and emotional challenge that goes along with that, I do think that changes and impacts your mentality and your mindset and your attitude. And I think for, you know, someone like Zach, and you could say this, I think too, you need to put in perspective the challenge too of if you're not winning games, and someone may turn that and say, well, you're a part of that, and Zach LaVine needs to be. I would flip it around and say that also the atmosphere and the feel and the environment and, you know, what you're going into to daily show up to work and get ready and get yourself focused when maybe you're not seeing some of that success in the win column. That isn't easy. And that's where you hope that the steps will be taken and the progression and the freshness. And that's where I think it goes back to the idea of the clean slate top to bottom and across the board with some of the people that they will be answering to, and whether it's, you know, what's happening with AK and with Mark Eversley and Billy Donovan and the coaching staff. I think that rejuvenates you. And I think, you know, for Zach LaVine and some of these other players, you know, or however the roster shakes out, I think that's something that really makes a difference and could potentially fuel him even more than we have seen. But I think we've seen that, you know, in a really, really impressive way the last few years.
A couple more, Sarah, before we let you go. You obviously spent a fair amount of time covering Chicago sports before moving over to the East Coast. So I'm curious to get your take on, from your perspective, how the sports fandom in those cities is different. You know, there's so many layers to the Chicago-New York rivalry. And it's a shame that in the NBA, it doesn't exist like it did in the glory 90s days of, you know, MJ's Bulls versus Ewing's Knicks. And that, you know, other than that one pretty entertaining seven game Bulls Nets series in 2013, the failed Paul Pierce KG Nets experience.
Yeah.
That the Bulls Nets rivalry has never really been a thing. But being around sports fans of both cities, I'm curious if you've noticed any stark differences in how the fans relate to their teams. And I'm not trying to goad you into any specific answer here. I'm legitimately curious. And then as a second parter to that, have the Nets overtaken the Knicks in New York yet? Because anytime Bulls fans get discouraged over the last few years, we always say to ourselves and each other, well, at least we're not the Knicks. Like, it could be worse. And it seems like with Kyrie and KD, everybody thought, oh, the Knicks, we're going to get Kyrie and KD. Well, you got neither and you didn't get Zion either. Are the Brooklyn Nets actually a team that people in New York care about yet? Because when I lived in New York in 2013, I went to that Bulls Nets playoff series. That place was empty. Like, what's going on with the Knicks Nets rivalry? And what are the differences between New York fans and Chicago fans in your mind?
I don't even know how I would describe at this point the Knicks-Nets rivalry. And I think if you asked any person off the street that is a New Yorker or lives in New York around the area, they'd probably give you a different answer, just because throughout the course, especially of the last, since I've been here, the last eight seasons, for the Nets, there have been so many changes and so many iterations to the group and so many different levels of expectation. And probably people early on that, were fans or checking things out or not sure how they felt. I would say the last few years, making the playoffs, being a bit of the underdog story, as we've talked about some of these players that you really root for, those that are Nets fans or had started to become Nets fans, really, falling in love with what the team had been becoming. And then with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, it was a whole different story and entirely changed the complexion of how the franchise and the organization was looked at. However, I think with Durant still being injured last year, with Kyrie missing some time, I think the true test will be next season. How they look, how they progress, what happens. And I say all this to say throughout the course of those years, the Knicks have, it's well documented, they have struggled. But the Knicks are still the Knicks. And I think that's where it goes back to, depending on where your loyalties lie and depend on, who you grew up cheering for, if you want a different change or, the players that you're rooting for. I think it's going to be a fascinating thing to see how that evolves, especially over the course the next couple of years, though I think there would be nothing better, as you guys know, and it's always like this when two teams in the same city are great at the same time. I mean, I always hope the Knicks are great because I think that would just make things even more fun. But with that being said, I think when you talk about the comparisons between the two city or the if you said differences, I would say to me it's more similarities because fans are just passionate about their teams and in working, obviously covering the Brooklyn Nets, but especially early on before I moved into the analyst role, covering the Yankees and doing some work with the Yankees and then working for the Yankees Entertainment and Sports Network. And, just all of those things. I think obviously there is more teams here, the three hockey teams, two NFL teams, two NBA teams, the two baseball teams, but there is a passion and an understanding and just a want and desire to talk about every detail of every aspect of everything that's going on when you're fans of these teams. And I think we see that in Chicago. Like I grew born and raised in Chicago, grew up in Chicago, but especially covering the teams and being around fans and just getting even a better grasp, just that love and passion for sports exists at such a enormously high level. And I can't get enough of that. And I still think now when people will talk about memories or different instances, like I will never be able to erase from my mind that Celtics Bulls series I say I can't erase it. What was it? 2009? 2010, I think it was 2009.
Correct.
Derrick Rose's rookie year, like those moments of, being in Boston, those moments at the United Center, like the moment Ben Gordon, like all of that whole team and that whole run, it was
the unstoppable
that was,
John Salmons.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. Like, and everything that was, and that was that I was just getting started with my, I'm like, oh my God, does this happen all the time? Like I was spoiled early on. And then with the Blackhawks and the Stanley Cup run, little did I know it. It's not always so glorious. But that to me is the beauty of both of these cities, because you have that and you have fans that love your team, but you also have the same amount of then you want them to be good. So there's some critique and there's criticism and there's very strong opinions. But that I think is the fun of all of it.
I say it all the time to people at 670 working the radio stations. Like I wake up every morning and hoping that there's a caller out there, whether they be super optimistic and positive or super, super angry, that they call our station and just let us hear their opinion. Because that, like, the day you wake up and you don't get people like that and those callers, you know you're doing something wrong as an organization or as a city rooting for your teams. So I always am very thankful for fans who are super passionate like that. The last thing I had for you, and we started with the bubble, I kind of wanted to end with the bubble. I asked a couple other people this over the last couple of weeks, but I'm curious your thoughts on some of the young players who broke out in the bubble. Guys like Tyler Hero for one, Duncan Robinson being another. Do you feel like there's a certain element of fan, whether it be fans or people in the media, that will watch those guys and say, they did amazing, I think they're going to be great players, but I still got to see them play in front of 25,000 screaming fans when it's 40 seconds left on the clock, we're down three, and you got to hit a big bucket. Like, those moments still matter to a lot of people, and wonder if that's going to translate. Do you have any reservations or concerns about some guys that had breakout seasons in the bubble and then are going to have these huge high expectations going into the next several seasons and might disappoint? Or do you think the real deal is what we saw and guys like Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, et cetera, are the real deal? That's exactly what we saw.
I will answer that twofold by saying I think you can't do regardless of the environment. If you don't have it in you to do things, you're not going to be able to do those things, regardless of who you're playing, where you're playing, what you're doing. So the Tyler Heroes, Duncan Robinson, Jamal Murray, you said it, the list goes on. There were so many really eye-opening and extraordinarily exciting performances we saw from young players that I think maybe the casual NBA fan or even the NBA fan didn't know, or we didn't know that they would have them. Have it in them. I think that it's an answer we will never be able to get, just understanding through all the challenges of the list goes on of being in the bubble, being away from family, the physical, mental, emotional toll that it could take on you, everything happening in the world right now, and that these players were carrying and dealing with. There is so much to it that I think, you know, that is one aspect to it. But I do think the lack of fans, you know, the screaming fans playing on the road, the somewhat sterile environment, being in the same gyms and the same rims and getting used to the background and where you're shooting. I think there's a lot of things that could factor in that you look at and say, okay, if they were on the road at Boston, or if they're on the road at Toronto, or if you're on the road, you know, at Staples Center, are these players having these same type of games? I think that's a question that can be asked and we'll never know. And I do think for many fans or people will be like, okay, how are you going to come back? Like, what are you going to come back with next year? And how are we going to see it play out? I would say though, for the players, like the magnitude of the moment was still the same for them. The understanding of what it meant in trying to win a title and being in those moments was still just as big and just as important. It didn't change. So the pressure they felt, or the lack thereof, but how they were able to handle that is still, regardless of what it is, it's a different environment, but it is still those same pressures. And I think being able to deliver in those moments and give those performances for those players, that's something you carry with you. And I think we see so many players build off of big moments or have the confidence to have been there before. And so often we talk about what it means to play in the playoffs and have playoff experience and just how different it is. And that's not just the environment, but it goes into the scouting and the study and how teams are going to game plan and prepare for you and the adjustments made. For those reasons, I think so much of that will help them grow and have helped them grow and will be carryovers. But by nature, I think you never really know. And that's, you know, that's it kind of is the difference between some young players and even bubble environment or not. I think just the consistency of play is something that guys really search for. And oftentimes with young players, it takes a little bit of time and you see flashes and you see the potential. But can they do it on a day in, day out basis? And I think the same thing applies in this moment. So those questions will still be the same and will still need to be answered. But I think for those individual players, that confidence that they garnered and, you know, maybe even grew thanks to what they were able to do, that doesn't go away.
Final here, Sarah. Our mutual buddy, Kendall Gill, has been lazy shaming a lot of his colleagues and friends on Twitter and Instagram recently with this 60-40 workout routine that he has just built up into this incredible empire. He challenged me and some of our NBC colleagues out of the gate, and I laughed and said, hell no. I mean, my daily exercise is a few trips between the couch and the beer fridge while I'm watching sports on TV for several hours. I am 100% certain that I, on day one, would keel over and expire if I tried to do that. You, however, being who you are, fully embraced and accepted that challenge and completed Kendall Gill's 60-40 fitness challenge. Okay, first of all, tell us what that was like. And secondly, could you please just tell Kendall the next time he sees me to like not give me a hard time about it?
I tried to. Yeah, I got shamed. He finally got me. He was calling me out on my phone and text and constantly saying, calling me out on Twitter, calling me out on Instagram for months and months. And I was like, oh my goodness. And just to get Kendall off my back is worth doing. But no, you know, I absolutely adore and love Kendall Gill. And we, many moons ago at formerly Comcast Sportsnet Chicago and NBC Sports Chicago now, had a show called Mind and Body. And part of it was a workout show. So we did all sorts of different workouts. Kendall used to have me pushing his truck, his car, across the United Center parking lot and like doing all sorts of things.
That's
so
madness.
I am used absolute madness. I look back. I'm like, really? Like, how did I get talked into this? But he is the best in that regard. And it was tough. It was hard. And I knew it would be hard. But just obviously the dedication of doing it for 50 days and every morning and what you're asked to do of the, you know, 60-yard sprint, 40-yard jog, continuous. You start at 20, you go up to 45, back down. There's calisthenics and other exercises involved. And Kendall made me send him a video every morning to make sure I got it done. And he would check in and he would check in and he would ask how fast I was running. And are you running fast enough? And show me the exercise, make sure you're doing him correctly. And that's what I absolutely love about KG. And I said it before, I'll say he's such a connector and a leader and someone who motivates you and has such great fun in giving you a hard time. But also he's doing the work too. So I would suggest that you either, I don't know, to change your number or you actually see him. I probably could have changed my number.
I can't block the guy on Twitter. Like, I mean, you know, hopefully if things get back to normal at some point and we're at, you know, NBC's offices for a bull season again, he's going to be like, what, Matt, you're so scared of me. You blocked me on Twitter so I won't bug you about doing this workout.
That's how he is. And I'll
pop open a bag of chips and say, yes, Kendall, that's exactly what's going on here.
That's a good way to put it. He has the bullhorn out in Chicago. He's like, man, Kustak, I wish you were in Chicago to do this with us. You'd love it, the group. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, that would help being with the group and everyone seems so great. And I'm like, no, like, I don't need you. You yell at me enough otherwise. I don't need you during the workout actually yelling at me with a bullhorn. So.
Right. Which is happening, by the way, before the sun is even up. Like, hell no. Hell no. But I was, of course, not at all surprised to see you embrace that challenge, accept that challenge, and conquer that challenge. It's the same go-getter stuff that has you where you are. Chicago sports fans, and I think I speak for all of us, say we miss you here, but we are so happy for you and proud of you with the success that you continue to have doing what you do. And hopefully we could chat again sometime when the Bulls and Nets are getting ready to play each other, or maybe we're coming off of a Bulls loss to Brooklyn next season and we could break it down with you. But in the meantime, keep up the great work, be well, and we appreciate your time.
Matt Jordan, thank you. I loved every minute of it, and I'm always here and available for you guys. You know, my love for Chicago runs deep, so I appreciate you having me on.
Well, it's absolutely a two-way street. We miss you. We love you. And keep kicking ass out there in NYC.
Right back at you.
All right, appreciate it.
Thanks, Sarah. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again to Sarah Kustok for joining the show. You can follow her on Twitter at Sarah Kustok. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. If you've got any follow-up from either of these interviews, over 2 hours of conversation, Matt and I did over 90 minutes of mailbag on Wednesday. I'm sure there's a lot of thoughts racing in your mind. So you're thinking about the Bulls this weekend, you're thinking about the NBA missing basketball, less than a month away from the draft, and you've got a burning Bulls thought, hit us up on our text and voicemail line or on Twitter. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. Be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
And here come the Nets with LeVert over the midcourt line. A cut to the rim. Oh. And Mbabu Cabarro threw it away. He goes out of bounds. That's also going to be in charge.
He had a no-look pass. I would love to. I would love to show everyone. That was horrendous.
Yes, it was.
It was nowhere near anyone.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.